For the rest of the hour, a look at a proposal for a massive new project to map all the genetic mutations that might cause cancer. It's being called the Human Cancer Genome Project. But the project could actually attempt to map the genomes of many different kinds of cancers. According to Francis Collins, it would actually be the equivalent of more than 12,000 human genome projects. It's a lot of work there. So where is the work going to be done? And who is going to pay for it? Joining me now to talk more about it is my guest, Matthew Meterson, assistant professor of pathology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Harvard Med School, an associate member of the Broad Institute. He joins us by phone from Boston. Thanks for being with us, Dr. Meyerson.
Hi. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Is this basically we try to find defects in the human genome that might cause all these cancers?
So basically what happens in cancer is that you get defects in the genome that are unique to the cancer cell, and they're not part of the rest of the body. So what we're looking to find primarily are these cancer-specific defects.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Meyerson, how many do you think there might be?
You know, there have been different estimates based on kind of how the changes are in populations and how many events might be required to cause cancer, and also looking at how many different genes you need to mutate to cause cancer. And the estimates are on the order of about 4 to 8 causative changes.
Mm-hmm.
But cancers are also known to have high mutation rates. So it's very possible that there's going to be a significant background of other mutations. And I think, lastly, we don't really know the accuracy of these estimates. They're fairly preliminary in a lot of ways.
The number would be high, then.
It's probably going to be high.
Yeah. So how would this differ from the Human Genome Project? Would the Human Genome Project not pick up these mutations that cause cancer?
So the Human Genome Project was really a reference project to understand kind of the basic sequence and structure of the human genome. That project was actually focused on the sequence and structure of normal human DNA.
Right.
In cancer, obviously there are many, many different kinds of cancers, and it appears that each of these different cancers has a different constellation of mutations and other chromosomal alterations.
Mm-hmm.
So what you really need to identify that full constellation of mutations and chromosomal alterations is to look individually at individual cancers coming from distinct cancer types.
But aren't labs already doing these sorts of things?
So lots of labs, including my own, my colleagues at Dana-Farber and Broad, and a number of colleagues around the United States and throughout the world, are in fact looking on a limited scale for cancer-causing mutations, and we and others have found a number of such mutations in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea of a really systematic human cancer genome project is to scale up this effort significantly so that we can comprehensively identify the cancer-causing mutations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is an opportune time, both in terms of the technology of understanding the genome and sequencing the genome. I think it's also opportune in the way that pharmaceutical development has advanced, so that we can now make pharmaceuticals that are really targeted against the lesions that cause cancer.
So why don't the pharmaceutical companies just collect that and pay for it themselves? They're going to be making the drugs, as you say.
I think a couple reasons there. One is that this is something I think that probably to some degree pharmaceutical companies will support. And I think that's obviously a great thing that this will advance drug development, and I think we can expect that there will be support from the pharmaceutical industry.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the kind of scale of support that's really needed to achieve the project in a comprehensive and timely fashion makes a public project much more powerful, and that also gives more opportunity for drug discovery outside of the pharmaceutical industry as well.
Mm-hmm. How do you find a defective gene? Do you compare it to a normal one, like side by side?
Exactly. So basically what you have to do is take the same gene from the same person, and you determine the sequence of that gene from the cancer from that person, and you determine the sequence of the gene from a normal tissue from the same person's body.
And would two different people have different sequences?
Very possibly. So there is a lot of variation in the genome between people. There are variations known as single nucleotide polymorphisms, which are changes in the single letters A, C, G, or T that make up the DNA code. And these single nucleotide polymorphisms or single letter changes occur every 1,000 to every 1,500 positions in the human DNA sequence. So that many of these variations are silent. They're not believed to be functional at all. Some have functional changes, but it's important to therefore compare the cancer to the normal to see which changes are unique to the cancer.
Mm-hmm. And where do you think the funding for a huge project like this might come from?
So there's a proposal that's gone that the funding might come from the National Cancer Institute and the National Human Genome Research Institute together. I think that's a proposal that's under consideration right now.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, of course, if you find genetic differences, we know that cancers may have also environmental factors also. Could you account for those too?
So many of the environmental factors that cause cancer actually cause cancer by causing mutations. So a classic example of this is tobacco smoking, where cigarette smoking causes lung cancer, but it does so by actually damaging genes inside the lung.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's likely that many of the environmental consequences would be seen by a systematic analysis of the cancer genome.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255. And I guess if you find differences in genes of people, you might tailor drugs for those different genetic differences?
Exactly. So that's the real dramatic advance in cancer treatment and cancer research that has happened over the last several years, where a number of drugs targeted against genetic lesions have shown remarkable efficacy in treating cancer patients. Probably the most dramatic is a drug known as imatinib, or also known as Gleevec, for treatment of chronic myeloid leukemia. And in chronic myeloid leukemia, patients have an activation of a particular tyrosine kinase gene, the ABL gene, by a chromosome rearrangement. And the treatment with Gleevec has been extraordinarily effective.
Yeah. Give me an idea how, if you get this up and running, the logistics of this might work. Would you be collecting tissue samples from around the world that would come to one cancer center, or would you basically let them be done in other places?
I think that kind of planning is an open question. I think for reasons of kind of economy of scale, it probably makes sense to focus the work in a relatively limited number of centers. That way, both the sequencing quality control and the economy of scale for the lowest cost of sequencing could be done most effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, it may make sense to concentrate sample collection in a limited number of centers. At the same point, there are advantages having multiple centers in that they'll tend to compete with one another, and in that fashion spur on both the pace and the quality of the research.
And what happens to the intellectual property here? What happens to the knowledge? Would you allow it to be patented, or does it become open source to the public?
I think that's a really good question. I think that's one of the details that would need to be worked out.
Boy, that's a big detail.
Well, when I say that, I just mean that I'm not somebody with a lot of expertise in intellectual property. I think it makes sense that everyone who is able to develop a drug be able to develop a drug based on genetic knowledge that's developed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the knowledge being as open as possible is what makes the most sense.
We're talking about creating a project, the Human Genome Cancer Project, this hour, Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Of course, this is a major issue, I'm sure. You know, it's such a big one, it probably would come up in discussion early on, I would think.
I would imagine so. I imagine it has. As I say, my understanding would be that it would be as open as access as possible, but I just have not personally been involved in discussions of this question.
All right, let me see if I can get a question or two in. Let's go to Jeff in Kansas City, Mo. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, as far as the computing involved in sequencing all this, if they were considering using something similar to what SETI and the original Genome Project did. we're allowing people to donate their idle computer time to the project.
That would be interesting.
Might,
yeah.
Might help, you know, on the funding issue on it.
Yeah, could we hook all the country's PCs, idle PCs, together to work on this?
I think that's a really interesting idea. This is a project that's intensive in computational power. I don't know what are the efficiencies of, you know, distributing that widely as opposed to using dedicated computers. My gut feeling is that it would be more efficient to use dedicated computers.
Mm. All right, good suggestion. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Neil in Cleveland. Hi, Neil.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi.
Thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a comment. In your show on the Genome Project recently, not much was made of the lost opportunity costs. So essentially your guests all pointed to the benefits of the genome information which has been obtained, but there's no way of knowing what information was not obtained because people weren't funded for other things. Not that there's a one-for-one trade-off, but chances are if there's more funding for this systematic search for cancer-related genes, it's probably going to take funding and attention and resources away from other projects, even in the cancer arena. And I think the paradigm of find a gene, have a cure, is really not very strongly supported. Gleevec is a wonderful example where it did work, but there are an awful lot of examples of genes having been discovered in association with one or another disease. And not only is there no cure, we're a long way from even a useful therapy.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Meyerson, any comment?
Yeah, so I think that this project will have a catalytic effect on cancer research across many different fields. And I think that that was seen with the Human Genome Project as well, that actually knowledge of the human genome sequence has really transformed medical research in a lot of beneficial ways in terms of finding disease-causing genes in general for inherited diseases specifically in finding terms of finding cancer-causing genes. And then also very kind of basic questions, understanding what's the structure of the genome, how are our genes organized. And I think that a cancer genome project will have a kind of similar catalytic effect that even in cases where a particular gene is not, understanding of a particular cancer-causing gene is not going to lead immediately to a cancer-causing therapy, it will lead us to understanding a pathway, and understanding that pathway by the community of cancer researchers is something that will have enormous power in developing next generations of therapies, even though that may not be an immediate impact.
Do you think that you're going to have to get some of the giant names in, you know, genetic research behind this, the Craig Venters, the other people like that, before this might catch on?
I think a lot of the leaders in genetic research are in fact behind the project already. There was a National Cancer Institute working group that planned this that was chaired by Lee Hartwell and Eric Lander.
Right, that's pretty big.
And so I think that I think there's a lot of support in the scientific community.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us. We've run out of time.
All right. Well, you're most welcome.
Well, good luck to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Matthew Meyerson, assistant professor of pathology at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Harvard Med School. Our program is produced by Annette Heist and senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our director and web producer. Our interns are Corey Binns and Todd Neal. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where you can check out there for more information, links to our program, and Science Friday's Kids Connection, free curricula, teaching materials. So we leave up there. We have them created for you. Just click on the Teachers button and download them and take them with you. Also, you can iPod Science Friday and podcast it and take it with you, and it's all there in real audio and Audible. So all kinds of different references, and if you missed any of the stuff we talked about, you can also find other materials for them. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.